Welcome back to Women in Analytics After Hours, the podcast where we hang out and learn with the WA community. Today, we have Taryn Heider joining us. Taryn has over 20 years of experience in delivering large-scale operations and technology transformation programs across business intelligence, AML, compliance, HR, and shared services. She has led global transformation initiatives at Citibank in London, New York, and Tampa, and she also created and led the business intelligence unit as a center of excellence at Habib Bank Limited. Taryn is a strong advocate for data-driven decision-making and data democratization, and her work focuses on fostering cross-functional collaboration, breaking down data silos, and building communities of practice to enable self-service business intelligence delivery models. So today we're going to touch on a few of these topics with Taryn: the pros and cons of data democratization, the importance of a strong data culture, and the value of initiatives like COPs and self-service data communities. I am very excited to have you here with us today, Taryn. So welcome to the podcast and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Lauren. I'm super excited to be on here. Specifically, the community itself, the Women in Analytics community, I've been following you guys on LinkedIn for a while. There's some really interesting content that comes and opportunities to engage with other women in the data space. So very happy to be here.
Amazing. And yeah, just a pitch for the WA community. It's a great place to get involved and meet incredible people in the space, just like Taryn. So, all right, just to start off, Taryn, could you tell us a little bit more about your background and the path that's led you into data?
Sure. I started my career in financial services in London in 2001. I actually entered through a shared services function, which was focusing on delivering HR shared services. I then morphed into program management, took on some roles leading projects in the HR, global HR operations space. And my actual dedicated data role started around 2011. And this was within the business intelligence function as a global metrics lead. An opportunity arose to lead a team, look at different indicators within the AML space. But my fascination with numbers predates my career. I actually did an undergrad in BSc in economics. And at that time, the courses that I was taking were quite quantitatively heavy: math, econometrics, statistics. And that's actually where I really discovered my passion for data and numbers. Numbers made sense. They cut out the noise and they drove towards very clear outcomes. So when this opportunity arose within my career, I was super excited. I jumped on, and there's been no looking back since then.
That's awesome. And that's so true. Data, it cuts through the noise, right? It's, if you do it right, it's pretty much the facts. And it's hard to argue with opinions when you're up against data, right?
Absolutely.
So let's get into our first topic of the day, data democratization. And just to start with the basics, I know this, it's been around for a couple of years now, right? In some circles, a little longer, but it's still in many places a buzzword that has a little bit of fuzziness around the definition. So kind of at the core, what does data democratization mean?
Data democratization is actually the process of making data and data products available to everybody in an organization, irrespective of their technical expertise. So it doesn't matter if you're an IT person, are you part of a core data team? Do you have the information that you need to do your job? Is it available readily? This has, you're right, it has been a little bit of a buzzword, but I think organizations are taking this a lot more seriously now because there's several benefits in it, and I know we'll hit that a bit later. But the main shift that I see happening is that this has been made possible because now you have these analytics tools data visualization tools, which are low code. They're more user friendly. You do not have to have a degree in computer science or data science per se to be able to use them. They're user friendly. With some training and some guardrails, you navigate those tools quite easily. Historically, the models that were in place for data dissemination were led by IT teams. Data teams were, of course, experts in their field. But with the demand for data increasing, everything is data. We are creating data on a daily basis. I can see that, you know, it's going to become very hard for just a dedicated IT or data team to keep up with the demands that are arising on a day-to-day basis. And that's already happening now. So data democratization, as at its core, improves and enhances the data accessibility to end users of data products and empowers them to use those data products to make whatever decisions they need to on a daily basis.
That's great. And it sounds like the ease of starting a data democratization initiative because of the availability of these tools, because of this push for the ability for us to have greater access to data, because we now understand every year a little bit more the value of data itself and the value of people being able to understand data and bring that to folks in enabling them with their decisions, just thinking about every part of their role in a different way, as long as it's able to be informed by data.
Absolutely. Very, very powerful concept.
Yeah. And to touch a little bit more on some of the benefits, what are some of the pros of data democratization? Why is this something that should be an initiative that, other than just thinking about data access, we think about data democratization, we invest in that specifically?
I think at its crux, it would be the speed of decision-making within an organization. So depending on how fast information is flowing through an organization, how quickly the organization is able to react, and actually react is probably might have a negative connotation, but be more proactive in making decisions, right? Instead of being reactive. So that shift from being reactive to proactive, data democratization is a significant enabler for that. I also think data silos have historically been a problem. With the kind of holistic delivery, whether it's on the customer service side, whether you're in manufacturing, whether you're in financial services, it doesn't matter what your industry is, but the kind of collaboration that is now needed to make sure that you are delivering to your targets, and reducing, you can't just stay in your own lane anymore. You have to understand what are the drivers and the dependencies across functions. And democratizing data is a great way to get the right indicators and data products shared across teams to make them more efficient. And just one more thing I'd like to add, embedding a data-driven culture. So if you think about at the highest level, the culture within an organization, if data products are not accessible to people and they cannot retrieve them within a meaningful period of time to effectively do their jobs, then you're actually hindering the data culture within your organization. Whereas the need of the day is to actually empower data consumers to use those products better.
Do you have data skills and expertise to share, or an audience to educate? CoreStack is the only course platform where creators can easily deliver courses with integrated Jupyter Notebooks in free, paid, or pay-what-you-can pricing models. CoreStack is hyper-focused on the technical content creator, and they are committed to providing the tools you need to deliver amazing technical courses with hands-on learning. Head over to CoreStack.com/WIA to learn more and start building today. Yeah, and that brings up an interesting point that I think flows really well into something else we want to touch on. And you mentioned earlier data silos and just the lack of this strong data culture. What other challenges and roadblocks could you run into on this path toward data democratization?
Yes. And I think while I am a huge advocate for data democratization, I do think that there are several guardrails and processes that need to be set up to ensure that it's being done responsibly. You need to ensure that the right people have access to the right data that is governed. So there are several risks, and I think any conversation about data democratization would not be complete without discussing those risks. The first would be data security and privacy. There's a lot of talk around different regulatory frameworks. You've got GDPR. There's a lot of AI regulation starting to emerge as well. People are concerned, who will access my data? How will it be used? So there are data security and privacy risks. The other risk that manifests in a democratized data environment is, are the people who are consuming the data able to interpret it properly, right? Do they even understand how that data can impact that decision making? So using data-driven decision making as a buzzword is all wonderful. However, it can also, of course, have a negative usage. So it's very important to ensure that the people who are consuming that data and using it to drive decisions understand the best practices around using them. Data quality issues. This is something which I think I have seen a lot in my own career. It is a given wherever there's an operational environment, you've got multiple data sources, quality issues will occur. So it is very, very important to have a robust process in place that identifies the issues in a timely manner. You do a root cause analysis, you correct it to ensure that it doesn't recur. I would also see the more intangible risk is the cultural shift that is required, right? A lot of people invest a lot on the technology side. The tools are there. Everything is there. The licensing is there, and we want to move forward. However, is the organization ready? Are the people in the organization ready to adapt to and adopt that change? And there's a whole roadmap that needs to go in place, which involves training, data literacy, awareness sessions, rewarding data-driven decision-making behaviors, embedding them. So there's a whole intangible side to it, which is not just technical or tool-driven. It's driven by people. And that really is the biggest part of an organization or a change that needs to be managed.
Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of the getting set up to ensure that you can democratize your data is ensuring that you have the right setup even before you start that process. You have people that understand how you make decisions with data. You have an organization that trusts data to be what's going to inform their decisions. Mm-hmm. And you have people that you trust to interpret what you're providing with them in the correct way. And I think you touched on a lot of good points there with the people side of it, the culture. And so some of the other risks that come with self-service data, with just greater data access in general, you touched a little bit on data security and data quality, but what are some of the ways you mitigate the risk associated with that?
Sure. Data governance is a whole field in itself, in and by itself. And, at a high level, ensuring you have a robust, strong data governance structure and policy in place. This would entail ensuring ownership is clear, what is everybody's role and responsibility within the data governance framework, classifying data. That's the second part of it, which is very important. Is it public data? Is it restricted data? Is it personally identifiable data? Depending on the type of data it is, you would have a very different set of risk measures and controls attached to it. masking data, encrypting it properly. This would be the sphere of technology teams. It's a more technical field. Information security would be involved. So making sure you're collaborating with the right functions within the organization to make sure you have the right controls in place. And then continued data literacy, awareness, right? So making sure people know what the policy is, they understand the policy, they are trained on the data governance policy, they know what a breach of that policy would look like. So it is about spreading awareness and educating both the consumers and the producers of the data sets on doing this safely and securely.
And along with that, what is the role of these governance and oversight structures, be they committees, working groups, councils? How do they come into play? Do they champion data democratization and other initiatives, or do they serve as more of an advisory capacity to ensure they align with organizational goals and policy?
I would probably break it down in terms of data democratization in itself would, like any large change initiative in an organization, would require very strong sponsorship at the leadership level. You would need to have people who are bought into it. They want to see it succeed. They're going to champion it throughout the process. We're not talking about a couple of months of a project and you're done. This is a ongoing, continuous change which needs to be embedded in the very DNA of every organization. So you need to make sure you have the right people sponsoring, championing, and driving it. In terms of the management of the governance, I would say that that has to be more directive. A lot of the people who are part of the democratization process, it's a nice word, great concept, but they may not know what the risks are, right? So depending on your particular situation within an organization, are you using on-premises data architectures? Are you using cloud data architectures? Are you in multiple geographies? Each geography has a data privacy or a cross-border data aspect to it. You have to be very careful. Each jurisdiction has its own legal provisions, so you would need to ensure that you understand and you make sure that the teams are consulted, the ones that who are providing that guidance are consulted and you are not in breach or often non-compliance in for those jurisdictions. So I would say while data democratization needs strong sponsorship, which could be more open-ended, I would say on the governance side, you have to be more specific and it has to be adherence-based and it has to be monitored.
Yeah, and you kind of spoke subtly to this, but the having all of the right folks in that process. So your people that are going to manage data quality, the people that are building the models, having not just champions, but people in the loop on all of those different levels. Because, right, just like you would monitor a model after you put it in production, you have to monitor your data strategy and the way you're working with that, the policies, those processes. And I think that's something we're all kind of learning at the moment. Some of us know, but still a lot to learn, right?
Yes, it's a developing space. I think the proliferation of data from when I started my career in 2001 and now, back then we had Excel and there weren't that many tools. You had some feeds from different databases. You visualized in Excel and that was it. You made some charts. Now you've got this, huge proliferation of tools and products that are actually enhancing that data experience for you. So it has been a nascent space, but it's really caught on now. And I think a lot of organizations are making data strategy a core part of their overall enterprise or corporate strategy.
Absolutely. And I think that ties back to the data culture that you've touched on a couple of times now and the role of that data culture kind of permeating through an organization. So how does that strong data culture affect and empower an organization to be more agile and to be more able to mature analytically?
Interestingly enough, you know, I was doing a course on enterprise agility, I think it was 3 to 4 years back, and I started reading up on data democratization separately. So it was not a stream that I connected at that time. But as I proceeded through both subject areas, you know, I could see that there was a very strong correlation based on what I was reading and some of the case studies, where, you know, like every, so agility at its heart is the ability for organizations to adapt and respond to changes in their operating environment, you know, stimuli that are occurring within or outside the organization quickly to prevent any adverse outcomes, but also to continue to hit their targets for their strategy, right? So being agile as an enterprise or an organization means that you are quickly responding to and adapting to changes, which is critical in this business operating environment where tech is, you know, changing on a daily basis. So in terms of agility data, I would say is at the very heart of an organization's ability to quickly respond to and adapt to changing external operating events, and making sure that you have the right data points, the right indicators within your organization means that you're more responsive or able to be more responsive towards your customers or your goals or your targets as an organization. So I think there's a very strong impact of data-driven decision-making and on enterprise agility.
Absolutely. And from the sounds of it, some of those other initiatives that also increase the data culture and the data literacy of an organization, like communities of practice, seem like they can really empower that data culture from the ground up. So thinking about communities of practice, how do you usually see those starting, and how do they empower data culture and really enable data literacy?
I think it would be fair to say that most organizations are resource challenges at some point or the other, whether it's in relation to growth or internal initiatives. And I think communities of practice help self-service operating models. If you can embed those for some of the simpler, in this case, data tasks, right? Then you are reducing the burden on resources that could be busy doing other things which require a slightly higher technical expertise or know-how. So for me, you know, at the crux of it, it's about leveraging all the resources within an organization effectively. And the way this manifests in the data space is people who are working data products, whether it's end users or, you know, experts or subject matter experts, would know that there are certain changes or analyses that could be done very easily by front-end users, right? Again, I mentioned the low-code, more user-friendly data analytics, data visualization tools. You don't need a programmer or somebody who's coding to necessarily solve a graph visualization. Do you want a pie chart? Do you want a bar graph? You know, those kind of decisions are and work products can be done quite effectively through the end user tools. So I would say communities of practice where you have engaged users who are using the tool, they are trained in the tool, right? And you give them certain guardrails and make sure that they have the right setup in the tools, like, you know, they don't have they have the access that they need, again, is very powerful in terms of resource management. But I also see an other byproduct of that in the work that I do, which is, you know, the engagement level that you get from your users really helps with the adoption of the tools and to drive that data-driven culture, right? So if you have a community of engaged users that are engaging directly hands-on with the data product, In my last role, we had a center of excellence, a team of centralized resources that this community could go to and, you know, troubleshoot or quickly ask a question without that center of excellence becoming a bottleneck. Very powerful again, because that means that the customer derives value very quickly and moves on to their next task, and your space is maintained and focused on those tasks that need your particular expertise. So I think there's a byproduct of engagement and, of course, the resource management that I discussed earlier as well.
That's awesome. I think that's a great summary of that, as well as kind of a really interesting example of how you've seen this play out and real world example of the proof of investing in data culture, investing in your employees to empower them to make the most of the time they have to have the most impact.
Absolutely.
And so as we are wrapping up for the day, I would like to ask you something that I ask everyone that comes on the podcast, which is, what is a resource that's helped you in your career that you think others might be helpful to others listening today?
I love reading. So for me, it's been books. I stay on top of the latest publications in the data space, you know, and my particular focus is on the trending or the challenges. It's a very quickly evolving space. So whether it's through books, which is my preferred resource, or, you know, articles or online content on LinkedIn, there's a ton of resources out there. But for me, it's books. I like reading. And I actually have recently read two very good books, interesting books. One was by Brian Christensen. It's called The Alignment Problem. This focuses on the challenges in the underlying data sets that are being used by AI and large language models, right? And the second, I'm still in the midst of reading this, which is super interesting, is Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez. And this talks about the gender gaps in data sets, right? So the underrepresentation of female data points in data sets. So these books for me, and I do also look at articles and LinkedIn resources, but my preferred format is books.
Awesome. Well, those are two great recommendations, and we will link those in the show notes so everyone can check them out. They both sound like very, very important reads for anyone in the data and AI space, especially as we're thinking about, with all of the regulations coming, how we make sure that our data is unbiased, our models are unbiased. And that starts with the data being of high quality. So finally, how can our listeners keep up with you?
I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. I think there's a lot of resources out there, and I like connecting with people like your community, which I also found on LinkedIn. I am Taryn Hyder on LinkedIn, so you can find me through LinkedIn. I'd be happy to engage or talk to people, any follow-up questions or anything else in the data space. I'm super passionate about data. I don't know if that conveyed in this conversation, but also about women in the data space. I think it's just so important to interact with other women players in the data sphere for me as well, to see what's going on, what are they doing, what are their achievements, and how we can learn from each other.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Taryn, so much. This was a great conversation, and I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks.